A familiar underwater voice here, perhaps?
Today marks the end of the third year of our expedition. Faithful Calypso has carried us nearly 140,000 nautical miles. And the divers have spent the one-man equivalent of 14 months in the depth. Yet we go on, farther and deeper in the sea.
For years, the name Jacques Cousteau was underwater exploration. This film clip comes from the 1960s and 70s, but Cousteau speaks from the headlines of today.
There is a fresh sense of urgency in our work, observing and reporting on the awesome alchemy of the sea.
Jacques Cousteau's decades-long exploration and elegy to the sea he loved was a television phenomenon. And Jacques Cousteau's grandson, Fabien Cousteau, has just wrapped up his own record-breaking underwater expedition called Mission 31. For 31 days, Cousteau and his team lived and worked about 60 feet underwater aboard the world's only undersea laboratory, the Aquarius Reef Base in the Florida Keys. This kind of exploring in an underwater laboratory was pioneered by Grandpa Jacques 50 years ago in the Red Sea. Sending humans to study the ocean in this way is something WGBH science editor Heather Goldstone got to experience firsthand on her own, frankly, mind-blowing trip to Mission 31.
Aquarius is basically a hyperbaric chamber, but it's like a long metal oblong tube. It's about 43 feet long and 9 feet in diameter, so it's not huge on the inside. And they basically sank it full of air. And so to get into it, you put on your scuba tanks, you dive down to 60 feet, you duck under this little overhang at one end of Aquarius, and then when you stand up, you're actually standing up into air about thigh deep or knee deep in water and then standing in air. And you can look out windows, you go up a few stairs onto like a little porch, and you can look out windows and be watching the ocean around you. And it's completely surreal to know that you're underwater, but that you're standing in air. And I can only imagine what that experience is like for days or weeks for the aquanauts who were living down there. It was really pretty amazing just for the few minutes that I was down there.
In this particular environment down there, you know, how do you respond to things like sleep and metabolism, and how do the aquanauts interact with each other to make sure that they're all going to survive?
Well, first of all, there's this 10 hours of dive time limitation, but that doesn't seem like much of a limit. That could be pretty exhausting, especially when you consider the fact that even though it's tropical water, it's still below body temperature. It's constantly sucking heat out of your body. And they're burning 400 to 500 extra calories every hour just trying to keep their body temperature up. I mean, it's a huge, huge metabolic load. They're constantly eating M&Ms and fatty snacks. And one of the aquanauts told me that she'd been eating these. They mostly eat freeze-dried food like astronauts do. And she'd been eating this freeze-dried food called breakfast skillets, that's basically every breakfast food, the hash browns and the sausage and the eggs and the toast and everything all mixed together. And near the end of the mission, she actually looked at the nutrition facts on the back and was appalled at the calories and fat. And she'd been eating two or three of these a day just because that's what your body needs. And they're also, as a result, as you can imagine, prone to just falling asleep at the drop of a hat.
You can instantly fall asleep sitting up. I mean, within 30 seconds, I've seen people go out. And that, of course, is a green light for all of your narked fellow aquanauts to use you in whatever performance art they want to cook up in terms of posing things on your head or on your shoulders.
He mentions there the fact that being narked. So two other things there. First of all, you've got a little bit of cabin fever going on, right? You've got 400 square feet of space inside this habitat, inside Aquarius, and six people living in that. It's really tight quarters. So there's a lot of kind of joking and that kind of fun that goes on to make sure that relations don't get too tense. But then there's also the fact that when you have your blood saturated with nitrogen, there's something that happens called nitrogen narcosis, which basically means that maybe a little giddy, maybe a little euphoric. Some people actually get a little bit paranoid. It kind of plays with your mind and your judgment. And so everything can seem a little extra funny when you're down there as well.
So scientifically speaking, what's the advantage of studying the ocean environment using this kind of a technique?
Well, I'd say there are two things. There's an aspect of Aquarius that is not just the research, and it goes even beyond education. I'd call it inspiration. And Aquarius is connected to the internet all the time. They're doing these live talks and Google Hangouts and all sorts of stuff. And so people can actually see them living down there. And there's something really incredible about the amount of inspiration and excitement that that can generate that nothing else can really match. But then there's also the fact that when you've got 10 hours a day on the reef, as opposed to with three dives a day on scuba, maybe 2 hours on the bottom, the science you can do is that much more intricate. You can do that much more. I mean, they say they probably gathered a year's worth of data in 2 weeks with the Aquanauts down there. And then in addition, you can just slow down and look around. It's something that the Aquanauts call the gift of time, where they can really just look around them, make detailed observations of things that you just wouldn't have time to do when you're down there trying to use every second of your bottom time on scuba to get one experiment done.
And some of those detailed observations over a very, very long time horizon, which is permitted by this environment in Aquarius, tells a pretty sad story, as you learned during your reporting.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Aquarius has been involved in something like 600 research papers over the 100-odd missions that have been conducted there and are really giving scientists a detailed understanding. In particular, the Northeastern researchers that I was following and a lot of the research over the years has been looking at the detailed physiology of corals and of sponges, of reef organisms, and how they are responding to the myriad threats that they face at this point. It's pollutants and silt and nutrients running off of the land from development. It's overfishing and overuse of the reefs for recreation. And now, of course, the impacts of climate change, rising water temperatures, changing ocean chemistry. All that comes together in a pretty sad way. And I spoke with Mark Patterson. He's a professor at Northeastern University who's been working with Aquarius since 1984. And he says that the changes that he's watched in Caribbean coral reefs are really dramatic.
It's like watching a train crash in slow motion. And when you look at the landscape, it's like looking at an overgrown mossy city, like something out of, you know, one of these apocalyptic movies you see in the theater, where you see the corals that used to be there, and in your mind's eye, you just blur your eyes and imagine them all alive, and then you open your eyes and see they're all covered in algae and that they're dead.
That is so sad. And, I mean, you know, he's really describing an environment that for him is, you know, a supreme joy, but it tells a story that is a real tragedy on Earth.
Mark Patterson is a very jovial person, and when we talked about this, he said it's just, it makes him borderline depressed to even think about it.
And in your life experience, there's probably no price to be put on that first view you got looking out of Aquarius.
Definitely not, and I think every Aquanaut who's been down there would tell you the same thing. There's nothing like it, and everyone who has spent time in Aquarius says that they just can't wait for their next chance to do it again.
Better than Nemo.
Definitely better than Nemo.
Heather Goldstone, WGBH science editor, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.